is happening here?
Somehow, a town with no fault lines is shaking on a daily basis.
Maybe it's the apocalypse. Egon came out here for a reason.
Are you troubled by strange noises in the middle of the night?
Troubled? No. I'm usually dead asleep to hear noises in the middle of the night. But Kimmy doesn't go into the basement at night.
No.
No, you don't. And I wonder why. But before we get into that, I want to say hello and welcome to another episode of the Forever Fangirls podcast. I'm Sheila Amato, and along with my wife, Kimberly, we're your hosts, and we're glad you can join us.
Yes, and as you heard from the trailer, we're going to be reviewing Ghostbusters Afterlife, which was released in 2021, in honor of the release of the sequel, Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, which just released in March of 2024. I had to think about what month we are in.
Yes. As my wife mentioned, Afterlife was released November 19th, 2021 in theaters. Our standard spoiler alert is in effect here, as we will be talking about specific plot points and themes. So if you haven't seen Afterlife yet, you will be spoiled.
So getting right into the nitty-gritty of the movie facts, Afterlife's budget was $75 million. The opening weekend, which was, according to your notes here, the weekend before Thanksgiving, was $44 million. The worldwide lifetime gross up to the time of this recording is $204 million. And some little trivia from IMDb. This is the first Ghostbusters film to take place outside of New York City.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The movie premiered in New York City Comic-Con on October 8th of 2021 during a panel session of the ensemble cast.
Isn't that cool? Wouldn't that be really cool? You're there for a panel and then all of a sudden you're seeing a movie.
Yeah, especially since it's New York City Comic-Con and we go to that one, I would be geeking out.
Well, we started going to that one.
Well, we went to the very, very first one too. Yes, we're old. And Jason Reitman, the director of Afterlife, is the son of the late director Ivan Reitman, who directed Ghostbusters and Ghostbusters 2. So jumping from basic movie facts, unless I've missed anything and you want to add anything?
Nope.
Okay, so jumping from that, we're going to go right into the synopsis. When a single mother and her two children move to a new town, they soon discover they have a connection to the original Ghostbusters and the secret legacy their grandfather left behind.
So you just wanted to debut that new soundbite, huh?
Well, I did a few episodes before.
Oh, you did? Oops. Never mind. Anyway, a quick summary. If you've seen the initial Ghostbusters movie, the original one from 1984, you basically know what happens. The difference here is that it's set in Oklahoma instead of New York City.
Sorry.
Anyway, as I was saying before I was rudely interrupted.
Sorry.
The difference here is that it is set in Oklahoma instead of New York City, as Kimmy mentioned in the trivia. They also explain how Egon Spengler died trying to fight Gozer and keep the world safe. Egon's granddaughter, Phoebe, is a very smart kid following in her grandfather's footsteps. She even wears the same spectacles as her grandfather. I thought that was really cute.
It is.
Egon is estranged from his daughter, Callie, who thought that Egon abandoned her like he abandoned everyone in his life. And the only reason why Callie and her two kids go to Oklahoma is because they were evicted from their apartment and Egon left the farmhouse to them. Unbeknownst to her, Egon has kept tabs on Callie growing up and has kept a shrine of sorts in his secret basement workshop. So the big bads are essentially the same, actually. Gozer is back with Zool, the gatekeeper, and the Keymaster. This time Zool, aka the gatekeeper, is Callie. And the Keymaster is Paul Rudd's character, Gruberson. Okay. Got all that?
Yeah, I got all that.
Okay. Before we get into the good, I have to say, it's really cool in the original Ghostbusters to see my alma mater.
Yes, Columbia University.
Yes, they shot it in the campus. It was so cool.
What's really funny is growing up, and it kind of is one of the good things, is the nostalgia of it. So, yes, we're referring to you seeing, you know, Columbia University and having dated you now seeing going, oh, that's that, that's this, you know, I can reference, but also the nostalgia in the 2021 release, seeing, you know, the props and the little gadgets and the jackets and the jumpsuits, the Ecto-1, you know, the nostalgia aspect of the film was great. And it was a continuity throughout. Mm-hmm. So I will give the film that.
Yeah. I thought that the puns that Phoebe said throughout the film were hilarious.
You were laughing hysterically and I just kept looking at you like,
it was funny. Why? It was funny.
One or two of them.
Oh, come on.
I couldn't.
Where are you?
Apparently in our house. it's not my cup of tea.
I guess
you know, I get it. It built her character because she's that awkward, quirky kid. Mm-hmm. So I get that it built her character. Some of the jokes, I was like, oh God, please no.
Oh, it was so funny.
But maybe that's the point, you know, to those who get the humor and those who are like, oh, all right, no.
Now, I have to say, the fact that they were showcasing Phoebe as a smart, nerdy scientist who understands complicated concepts at 12 is really cool.
It's great to see them developing a young woman, that it's okay that she's into STEM.
And that she's different. And you know what? It's okay. I like the fact that she was actually in some of her dialogue actually explaining the difference that's going on. Like, she'll see something, but she's not reacting like I would or someone else would. And she said, yeah, it freaks her out, but she's not always outwardly showing it. But she's freaking out in her head, right, where you don't see it. Almost like it's showing the parallel between her and her grandfather, right? Her grandfather was the same way.
And then if you look at her brother, who is the wild one, you know, he can sort of fix cars. We'll go into that in a moment. But he seems to be encompassing the other Ghostbusters, if you will. Mm-hmm. He is basically, I would say, like the Bill Murray character, where he's going after the girl. They seem to be trying to recreate the original four in a different form. So having that, like, I want to say like handoff, but the nostalgic theme through that, which is interesting. I think the ending, really, when Phoebe is struggling to hold the
photon.
Thank you. Pack. Wow, that was really just totally left my brain. I should know better. And, you know, the
thing
ghost
that
of,
shoots.
Yeah, the ghost out. Of Egon helps her. That almost got me.
Oh, that was a very, very powerful scene.
It was beautiful because it honored Harold Ramis.
Yeah.
And it was just one of those things where that kind of caught me off guard.
But you said that you were...
I expected it, though.
Yeah. You were expecting a lot of different things. I mean, I was too, which is... we'll get into that.
Yeah.
But you expected that, but it still caught you off guard.
It caught me off guard in the sense of I didn't anticipate my emotional reaction towards it.
Got it. Okay.
I thought I'd see it because at that point, the entire film led up to it. Mm-hmm. I expected it to be more of Callie's connection to her dad. Whereas you got that part got you. What got me is him helping Phoebe.
Oh, that got me too.
Oh, see, that part got me because I was like, he's busting ghosts again.
Yeah. So shall we move into the themes then?
Sure.
The whole thing here, the biggest theme for me, is that family dynamics can be rough, especially if you don't communicate, right? Key is communication. Mm-hmm. Callie obviously thought that her father just left her like he left his friends and everybody else, not understanding that he was trying to save the world for her. And so the fact that she didn't really know that until after he was gone makes it even more bittersweet.
Yeah.
And to me, it's that same theme of you better say things now, especially to your loved ones, how much you love them, because once they're gone, it's too late.
Yeah. I also think it immediately kind of clicked that she would have been in danger.
Mm-hmm.
And so would her kids. And so cutting everybody off kind of saved them. But on the other side of this, the Found family, him cutting off the other Ghostbusters and everything, because they just didn't want to believe him that Gozer was back and all this.
Yeah.
But it's also interesting that in death, he communicated better than in life.
Yeah.
With moving the lights around, opening drawers, playing chess with Phoebe.
Well, he was able then to open himself up. He wasn't able to do that
before. But that's my point. They were there and he now knew this is it. So there was a way to explain it so he could explain himself more in death than life. And unfortunately, your point, we don't get that chance.
No.
You know, whether you believe in an afterlife or not, we really can't sit here and say that definitively we know for a fact that we can come and I can leave you a note or I can move a light around or whatever. So I better take the time while I'm here to say I love you.
Yeah. It might be hard to communicate, but it's harder when everybody just drifts apart for no good reason.
Well, and if someone is gone, it's really hard to talk to them when they can't answer you back.
Or explain.
Yeah. But that went really down depressing anyway.
You know, the next thing that I wanted to kind of tie into this is that it does take teamwork to make the dream work.
Yes, right? It does.
At the beginning of the movie, Egon, was trying to build this massive trap to trap all of the ghosts who were trying to escape. And it didn't work. And the only time that it did was when everybody got together at the end, because it needed a lot of people to make every single part work. It actually reminds me of like any kind of team sport. Even tennis, which is a solo sport, you still need the help of your coaches, a physio, and everybody around you in order for you to be able to get to where you ultimately want to be, which is winning your matches.
Well, doubles is a team sport, technically.
It is, but I'm just saying that in any kind of sport, in any kind of endeavor, in anything that's worthwhile.
Yeah, you always need a foundation and a good quote-unquote army behind you of support, regardless of whether you're on the court by yourself or in a board meeting by yourself. You still need to work as one and have people behind you that believe in what you're doing and trust that you can present it in the right way.
Mm-hmm. Although if you're in a board meeting by yourself, that would not be a board meeting.
Really? That's what you're going with? I'm trying to just like relate it to like every other aspect. You know, it's not really a board meeting.
No, I'm sorry. I got caught up in that
one. Wow. Okay. Look, I'm just going to switch to, I like that the female characters in here, the two young girls were very smart and they were well fleshed out in the sense of they weren't one dimensional. Like when we watched the 1984 version, you could see that a lot of the female characters were very one dimensional. In this one, they were not. So I liked that.
We're talking about Phoebe and Lucky?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, I like that she teased him, you know, Finn Wolfhard's character, about how he was hitting on her. And he's like, I'm 17. And then when she finds out he's 15, she's like, what? You know, it's the normal teenage little stuff was cute, but because the female characters were not one dimensional, they gave an extra layer and it wasn't just the normal teenage angst. It had a little bit more depth to it.
Yeah, I really did. I know that I said this already, but the fact that Phoebe was just wicked smart was just great to see on film.
Yeah.
And I think it's because we were just at our nephew's robotics competition.
Oh, the robotics semifinals? Or something like that? I don't know. The winner went to the finals.
The winner went to nationals.
Nationals,
In Texas. But to see so many little girls who knew how to like make these Lego robots.
Autonomous robots.
Autonomous, doing different tasks. I was just like, oh my God, this is so cool.
Yeah. Seeing Phoebe in this film, pulling it back, it's great to see, even though her mother doesn't understand her at all. Mm-hmm. Kind of just lets her go. Like in the beginning, she's trying to do the electrical work in the apartment.
No, she's trying to...
She's learning. She's teaching herself. But her mother's like, I didn't ask you to do that. She's like, yeah, well. It's like, all right, fine.
Yeah.
You know, and kind of just shrugs it off. Like, it's my kid's interest and I'm just going to let it be.
She's trying to connect with her daughter in any way that she can.
And then seeing the end, how Phoebe has grown, there is a connection there because she realizes and accepts, my dad did love me. And then, therefore, she found her connection to Phoebe because, like, relationships are hard with families. She was resentful of her father, so she kept hating science.
Yeah.
And now she sees what was really going on, and she looks at her kid and goes, you know what? Have at it. You're a smart, intelligent woman. Go for it.
Yeah. Well, I thought you were going with the fact that towards the end there, her motherly instinct still kicked in and wanted to protect Phoebe. No matter what, regardless of the difference, still my kid.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right. Shall we... go into the bad.
You want to go into the bad? Should I start?
Yeah.
Why did we leave New York? I'm sorry. If Gozer's in New York, there's 2 points I have to make about this whole thing. If Gozer's in New York, right, again, it technically in Sigourney Weaver's refrigerator, if you think about it, but whatever the case may be, if you haven't seen the 1984 film and you're kind of lost there, if it's based in New York City, okay, the spirit realm and whatnot, I know they tried to like allude to it, but I didn't quite understand why we ended up in Oklahoma, in the middle of nowhere where the ghosts and demons really can't do that much damage.
Well, because it's in the middle of nowhere, there's a lot of selenium or whatever that mineral.
But that had been taken out and transported to the other building. Nobody even mentions if the building got knocked down or what. I see the connection again they tried to make. I just think New York City and Ghostbusters went hand in hand. So for me, as someone who watched the originals, who is a fan, New York City had its own character to add to the series. So to take Afterlife out and put it in Oklahoma just didn't sit well with me. It didn't add that extra level. I was so bored with the layout and what it was doing. And maybe it was because the budget was so low and they couldn't shoot in New York. I don't know.
$75 million doesn't seem low, but yes, I understand what you mean.
I don't know. I don't know what the reasons were behind that. But for me, I thought New York is a character in and of itself. And you've taken away one of the biggest things. And at the very end, you show me the firehouse is still there. Mm-hmm. You show me that the containment unit is flashing and everything. It's all still there. It's all still being paid for.
So maybe they're coming back to New York.
In Frozen Empire?
Yeah.
It just would have been better if they tried to formulate a story based around New York.
Yeah. I was more thinking that the reason why they chose Oklahoma was because it's in the middle of the U.S. and it's in the heartland, right? So maybe they were going to take it from the middle, from within. That's where I went, and I was like, okay, let's just let that play out.
I didn't see it that way, but I can understand your point of view. My second, I have a question, and maybe I forgot. So I'm asking you to enlighten me. In the very beginning, Egon is running through his field, right? And he's got the doggy in the containment trap, right? It was either the gatekeeper or the keymaster, whichever one, but it was in one of the thingies.
Yeah.
Who killed him?
Maybe the other guy, the other doggy.
But again, it's just one of those things where then you go into the pit and you've got all of those proton packs shooting the beams into this hole. So how did the doggies get out?
As the film went on and when they went into the abandoned mine, the two dogs were still trapped. That's where I was like,
but the dog, one dog was trapped and then they released it.
That's why I was a little bit confused.
So there's confusion there.
Yes.
Okay.
There is a problem with the continuity there.
Okay. So it wasn't just me.
Unless it was a different monster. But if we go back to the 1984 version, Sigourney Weaver was grabbed by Zool. And it was the same way where the hands came out of the couch and grabbed her, right?
Yeah, but they killed Egon. They didn't grab Egon. The same hands came out of the couch, if you know, and they killed Egon. So
right.
It's not quite explained.
Yeah, I don't know what that ghost was.
Because it couldn't have been Gozer, because then if Gozer was free.
Right, Gozer wasn't free at that
exactly.
point.
Exactly. And the steps looked like it was a ghost. You couldn't see it. So what was it?
Yeah. And later on in the film, when Callie was in the workshop, that fog came down, and it was the same one where Egon was, and then she was possessed.
But that goes to, why wasn't Egon possessed? Because they could have possessed Egon and then learned everything he knew and stopped everything he did. You know what I'm saying? The film doesn't happen if that happens.
Right.
I'm just saying that there's a little confusion, and I'm curious if that's another little plot hole that people kind of just skipped over.
Yeah.
Because reviews of this from fans are very, very high.
Yeah. Let's move on then to another bad where even for me, the movie was slow.
Yes.
And it dragged in some spots. Now, I know that they were trying to set up the situation, right, and the whole movie. But as the movie went on, it was so similar to 1984 that there wasn't a lot to set up.
For new viewers, I could understand why they wanted to set the foundation. However, I agree with you. It felt extraordinarily slow. And I felt like they were trying to copy the lines of 1984 so much so that it kind of didn't impress me at all.
Yeah.
And while I was impressed that they didn't always show the ghosts, they show like footprints, the outlines, they showed like shadows, the fog. I like all that. That's classic storytelling and stuff. And I loved that. Mm-hmm. But in the same token, I felt like I was watching a family drama more so than a Ghostbusters film. Because even in the original Ghostbusters, you see a ghost in the beginning and you know it's there and then they're fired and then they have to start building their entire foundation. Mm-hmm. So you see a ghost in the beginning and now you're being introduced to all these new characters where you know it's a Ghostbusters movie, you know it has ghosts in it, and yet there doesn't seem to be enough movement. And it's a 2-hour film.
Yes, over 2 hours.
It doesn't seem like there's enough information and movement going where I didn't take out my phone.
It happened all like in the last maybe 40, 30 minutes or something.
I paused it and you went, oh my God, there's another like two whatever. I'm like, no, honey, it's a 2-hour movie. We're halfway through. And you're like, oh. You don't normally do that.
No, I don't.
I'm the one who does that. And then you go, oh no, it's so good. Don't worry about it. I'm sure it's the foundation building. You're fine.
Yeah. I usually enjoy the ride, as it were, but it wasn't moving enough for me to be as engaged as I thought I should be.
So thinking of moving, how did Trevor fix Ecto-1? I mean, it looks like he just twisted some things and then Egon moved a cable down.
Yeah.
But did it need parts? Were parts rusted? Did he have gas in it?
Well, the thing that I was really keying in on was the fact that he was driving it, and I'm like, oh my God, did he change the tires? Because those tires would be so bald.
Yep.
And I'm like, the fact that he was making, you know, those quick turns mm-hmm. as they were chasing the ghost.
Wouldn't
finally
he be sliding and like drifting?
Yes. I was like, oh no. I understand it's supposed to be like suspension of disbelief, but in those scenes, at least show that he bartered for some parts or something.
Maybe that's where they should have edited out other scenes and developed that scene where they show him getting parts or working at the diner and earning his paycheck and getting new parts.
Yeah.
Or using the junkers out back even yeah. and using those for parts.
Right.
But also with the suspension of disbelief was the jumpsuits that looked like they were for adults all of a sudden fitting the kids.
I was like, no, that can't be. I think it was several scenes before then that Phoebe found the secret lair,
with
right?
the Nestle Crunch Bar in the pocket.
Yeah, all of that. And they were adult-sized. And I'm mm-hmm. like, okay, so there's another nostalgia part there. Yep. But for them to grab it all of a sudden and then fit all of them, like, no.
I could understand Finn Wolfhard's character and Lucky, maybe, because they're teenagers. But not Phoebe, not podcast.
No.
And they did.
It'd be like me wearing your pants. I'd be like, I can't move. I can't walk.
And I can promise you.
I'm stepping on the pant leg.
I can promise you. I have by accident worn my wife's pants and they become 3-quarter pants. So it doesn't look very good. But that was bothersome. You know, and speaking of Finn Wolfhard, he's really not used as much as I thought he would be, as much as he was promoted.
Yeah. I was like, wait a minute. I thought he was going to be, you know, the main character. Now,
glad I don't mind that Phoebe is.
Glad is that Phoebe is.
Yeah.
But I thought that maybe they didn't really use Finn Wolfhard as much as they should have.
Yeah.
You know, the story just didn't...
It didn't dictate it.
No, it didn't dictate
But again,
it.
This is where I think between the confusion and certain characters should have been developed more and weren't. It seemed to be struggling to get you from point A to point B because they were so desperate to bring the connection of Egon and Phoebe in. And they tried to really focus on that. And by doing so, you really don't know about the other characters. Whereas, again, we did watch the original after watching this, and you can see where the development is, where it's lacking. The side characters have a little bit, like you don't know much about Sigourney Weaver or Rick Moranis, mm-hmm. but you know enough to know that they're innocent.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know enough here about a lot of these characters, even Phoebe for the most part. You know a good amount, but not like the original where you knew much more about them. And again, the original script is still thin, don't get me wrong.
Yeah. The other thing that I thought was quite curious is that in the farmhouse, when they first go in, there was a stack of books just like the original in the library where it was just books stacked floor to ceiling. And it was standing by itself. Right after that, there was the scene of the earthquake happening. And Paul Rudd's character says that, you know, there's an earthquake almost every day. How in the world are those stack of books standing still? Yes, this is Ghostbusters. You have to have suspension of disbelief. But the laws of physics still, the laws of physics for certain things, mm-hmm. the stack of books should have fallen.
I mean, unless it was slimed together?
Or they were glued together.
As a prop and they didn't know how to undo it?
Especially since they were touting the science.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with all of the seismology stuff, explaining the earthquake waves and all of that. To be really authentic about that. Now, I don't know a lot about seismology, but it looked authentic to me. Some of the other stuff wasn't. And that's where the imbalance, I guess, of this movie was starting to get to me. They want to bring in, I think, the same point that you were trying to make earlier, is that they're bringing in all of these nostalgic things, and it's just not gelling together with the yeah. story.
Yeah.
It's frustrating.
At a certain point, I'll be honest, I kind of tuned out.
Well, that's not good.
No, but I had just started going, this is going to happen. And I was leaning over and telling you what was going to happen next. And you're like, oh, how did you know? It's 1984. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I can see how that would be cumbersome.
Yeah. But anyway, that was all of my bad.
It's all of my bad too. Should we go into the cute?
Okay.
You love the pun jokes.
I love the pun jokes, but more than the pun jokes and all of the pun jokes.
All of them? Or did you have a favorite?
No, I love all.
Just all of them.
I love all of them. At the end scene when Gozer says to Phoebe, are you ready to die? And Phoebe just straight face retorts, no, I'm 12. Like,
yeah, straight up and just looks at this massive demon ghost like, no.
Like, no, I have my whole life to live ahead of me. It was adorable. That line was great.
Yeah. And again, the cute moment at the end with Callie meeting Egon and hugging him and finally coming to understanding and letting go.
The thing there with that scene that I was surprised with was that he was solid.
Yeah.
Right? Most ghosts so far, they go through you and then you get slimed. But he was pretty solid where she could hug him and he could hug her back.
Well, the metal-eating ghost, I call him Metal Muncher. I don't know what they called it. I don't remember.
Oh, yeah.
That was pretty solid. I mean, Slimer is technically pretty solid. He slimes you. He hits you and knocks you down and slimes you.
Mm.
So I think there might be different levels. Mm. I mean, in the first one, they had ectoplasm everywhere. So who knows? I think that's something that doesn't necessarily have to be explained. I think that actually can fall into the realm of disbelief.
Yeah.
But is there anything else?
I don't think so.
Well, I'm good too.
All right. So I guess that is our discussion of Ghostbusters Afterlife. Now it is time for our Forever Fangirls rating. Drum roll, please. We rate Afterlife 2.5 stars. And we agree on this rating.
So I guess, you know, technically saying, can it develop legs to success? Well, it's already been out for quite some time. And it is considered a success since it may double its budget with the worldwide haul. While for us, it really isn't a great sequel, it will continue to make more money now that Frozen Empire is out. Like, yeah, people like us have bought it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure it will continue to make money from diehard fans. Like a lot of other Ghostbusters fans, I grew up watching the original movies. I wanted the 2016 version to do very well. And I did see it. And while it wasn't perfect, I kind of enjoyed the film for what it is and wanted to see where they were going with it. If anybody's seen Star Trek, the new reboots of it, that's kind of how I felt the 2016 Ghostbusters was going. It wasn't great, but it was fun for what it was, and I could see it, even though I also saw the flaws in their attempt and their execution. But that being said, the fans emphatically said no, so the studio nixed it, regardless of how much money the film actually made. Afterlife was reviewed by fans as this amazing new installment, the one we fans really wanted and deserved. And truthfully, Afterlife just left me wanting. It felt like I was watching Star Wars The Force Awakens. While it was fun, you can literally call it an updated version of A New Hope. And that being said, initially, the new Star Wars trilogy actually gave us things within the new series that you were interested in and it made you want to come back.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing here kept my interest. It was the same villain swapping out Slimer for the Metal Muncher, same Gatekeeper and Keymaster, which were portrayed much better in the original 1984 movie by Sigourney Weaver and Rick Moranis. At this point, I really think the franchise should just be left alone, allow all of us who grew up with the originals to live in nostalgia, remaster Ghostbusters and Ghostbusters 2, re-release them to theaters, and introduce a new generation to lightning in a bottle, because I'm thinking they're trying to recreate the wheel, and in my opinion, it's not working.
Mm. Well, for me, after watching Afterlife, I asked if we could watch the original, like I mentioned earlier. Now, there were scenes that I missed from the 1984 version, but I vastly, vastly, vastly enjoyed the rewatch than I did the sequel. There was just no originality to make it a sequel to the original. And as far as I know, this wasn't supposed to be a reboot, but it ended up being a poor version of one. I mean, I did enjoy watching McKenna Grace's Phoebe, like we were talking about. Seeing a smart and strong girl portrayed on screen is always a plus in my book. And it was one of the few bright spots of this movie.
Would you watch it again?
Only if I absolutely had to.
I really don't think I would ever want to see this again. We own it now, people. But anyway, that is going to be our show for today, folks. Thank you so much for tuning in to our review of Ghostbusters Afterlife from 2021. If you'd like to reach out to us here on Forever Fangirls Podcast, we have several ways you can do that. You can go to our website, foreverfangirls.com, find the links to our Discord, social media, contact form, and easy access to subscriptions and past episodes. Please do not forget to leave us a review.
Until next time, stay safe, be kind, and remember, why can't you trust an atom?
Oh, God. Why?
Because they make up everything. They make up everything. Get it?